So I've been taking care of the house here, and I had to water the plants yesterday. And let me just tell you, girl, I watered that plant way too much. There's just water all over the floor. I didn't have any paper towels left. What am I supposed to do?
Well, you just let evaporation do its trick. And maybe the plant wants to suck it back up, you know, asking it shall receive.
No, it was on the floor.
Well, you just, you know, it's hardwood. Is it going to soak into the wood? Is it going to ruin the wood?
Yes.
Well, I don't have anything else for you. You know, you're going to have to use your shirt, probably.
From late June to early August, we took a 14,000-mile cross-country road trip to get away from the world.
It brought us to 20 national parks, 33 states, 46 cities, and 43 national monuments, forests, memorials, grasslands, and recreation areas.
So in each episode, we'll outline one of our stops, talk about the history of the place, our impressions, and a piece of dark history tea associated with it.
It's gonna be dramatic, scandalous, dare I say, captivatingly funny, and hopefully it inspires your next trip in the United States.
This is Road Boys with Jeremy
and Jacob. Welcome to another episode of Road Boys.
Road Boys.
We're here.
Part 14.
We're making it happen. We're on our feet. We're making it happen. Shout out to, you know, did she ever recover from the coronavirus, Gloria Estefan?
Well, just the fact that I never got a news notification that she died, it's a good sign.
All right. Well, that's promising.
These days, if you don't get notifications that someone's died, it's a good sign.
Yeah, that's promising. Mm-hmm. Well, this week, we got some snow.
Oh, yes, we did some early December snow. Well, nowadays, you'd call it early.
Jeremy, I hate it.
Oh, well, we differ on opinions so much about winter weather. It's a great schasm.
This is why I'm so excited to be back in LA. That I don't have to put up with this.
I'm so excited for LA, but I gotta say, this is something I'm going to miss, actually.
Oh my God, the snow, it's just everywhere.
It's beautiful. You don't like how it makes the world perfect and quiet and nice and white?
It makes it gross and dirty and wet and cold.
That's if you look at like street curbs. I'm talking about like lawns.
Oh, and, my God.
And you know, and then for a period of time, your driveway when no one's plowed it out or anything like that or shoveled it. I'm talking about perfect.
Did you see Binghamton?
Did I see Binghamton? I was watching the Weather Channel. Jim Cantore, he wanted to be there so badly. He realized that they sent him to the wrong town for the snowstorm, and Binghamton got shellacked 40 inches.
Binghamton, like, is already a bad enough place to live on your own. Like, if you have to put up with living in Binghamton, and now you have to put up with 40 inches of snow?
40 inches of snow, and then if you also are living in one of those older houses, as is the case for Central New York and Binghamton, Syracuse, Cortland, and your roof caved in, you also have to put up with a caved roof.
Oh, my God.
Which happened to a lot of people, apparently,
which is
unfortunate.
Oh, no.
Well, I there's a lot to say about being snowed in. I tend to enjoy it.
Well, I know you've really been tracking this storm.
Oh, well, do I tell our listeners that I have a hobby of tracking winter weather, not any other type of weather. I don't care about hurricanes. I don't care about thunderstorms, summer, you know, weather. What else?
Earthquake.
I care about snow. I don't care about earthquakes.
Tornadoes.
Ah, who cares?
Typhoons. Cyclones. Nope.
I care about flakes of snow and whether I'll get 1 to 3 inches, 3 to 6, 6 to 12, you know, that's what I care about. And it's pretty. I like it. Something satisfying about snow. It makes me excited.
Well, we'll go up to Lake Tahoe or something if it's really that big of a deal.
Yeah, it's a big deal. I want to get snowed in. I want to be tricking out for milk and eggs.
Well, I know you used to have a big thing for meteorology.
Well, it was a big thing for meteorology, but only
did you or did you not go to weather camp?
Well, that's a very pointed question, and it can be answered in many ways. Yes, I went to weather camp. There are a couple schools in the U.S. that are very big if you want to go into meteorology. Just, you know, for point of reference, I ended up majoring in advertising, so obviously I realized it wasn't for me. Mm-hmm. But I did go to weather camp at Penn State and realized that I really only liked snowstorms, and that was and I thought that would be what we focused on. But it was the summer, and we didn't talk about snow at all. And
oh no,
we did a lot more geeky stuff, and I didn't. It was a lot of math. Wasn't expecting that. I just can read maps. I know where I live on a map. I read it.
Jeremy, I could so imagine you being a weather guy.
I mean, people did think I would be like my mom when like my parents, some of my friends in high school and middle school when I was tracking this stuff would be like, you'd be a great weather guy. I'd be like, well, yeah, but I kind of have to know more about meteorology and that requires numbers. So
yeah, I guess. Well, there's been a lot going on this week. I got a new laptop.
Oh, yes. Congratulations.
Thank you. I couldn't believe this. I was at work, so I had this thing scheduled to be delivered on this past Thursday. And mm-hmm. I was at work on Monday, and I get a text from Apple saying, surprise, today's the day. Our package is at your door.
They really did. They really hit you with that surprise. This shouldn't be a thing. It. They shouldn't be leaving that stuff at your door, at people's doors.
How irresponsible. This is an expensive-ass laptop, and it's just sitting on my doorstep? Are you kidding?
Someone needs to sign for that sort of thing. I mean,
well,
that's something...
Well, because of the pandemic.
Well, I guess. Yeah, that's... There's just some things you shouldn't change, in my mind. But wear masks, and then you got to sign for something. For a laptop? I mean,
agree with you, but like...
Yeah.
There it was on my doorstep. I got to rush home from work. I got put on the gas pedal. Oh my God.
You know, around this time of year, porch pirates are huge things. And I think that would be something if they grab that box, nothing in their wildest dreams would imagine a new like hyper super powered MacBook Pro or whatever on their doorstep.
It's unbelievable.
It'd be a jackpot, you know. But I'm glad you received it. I'm glad you actually have it in your possession.
I do have it. I'm using it right now to record this episode.
Fantastic. And that's working.
Yeah. Mm. It's working so far. I hope it doesn't break down in the middle or something. That'd be pretty bad.
That'd be so unfortunate. But, you know, warranty. Warranty on these things. I think you've actually you've gone past it. It's not valid anymore.
It's already expired.
That's Apple Care for you.
Yeah, right. There it is. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I do want to give a quick shout out to Stockard Channing.
Oh yes.
Not because of listening or anything, but purely because congratulations on being Stockard Channing.
She really won the life lottery. When God was, you know, she's up, she, you know, before you're born, of course, so something we all know, we get a choice to actually choose who will be as people. God sits in front of us. This is something we all know.
Yeah.
We don't remember all this. And sometimes there's a thing called the Stockard Channing lottery. and you pull the lever and only one person in history gets to win that. And this celestial being became Stockard Channing. She won.
It was Stockard Channing. I mean, congratulations to her. You know, yes. A lot of people, many people have told me, mm-hmm. Jacob, I bet you could do a really good Stockard Channing impersonation. And I know, like, you know, that might seem a little out of left field, but I'm telling you, thousands well, have told me this.
Well, I've walked down city streets with you.
Yeah.
And the people who don't even know who you are come up to you and me and say, I bet your friend over there, he could do a good one. He could do a good Stockard Channing impression. He looks like the type of guy.
Yeah. Yeah. So without further ado, let me give it to you.
Hit me. I'm the president, by the way. I'm Martin Sheen.
You're Martin mm-hmm. Sheen. All right. Ready? Mm-hmm. Shut up, jackass.
Abby.
Yeah. Oh, man. I really love Stockard Channing. I think she's such an icon.
She is one of the best first ladies we ever had. And I count the Bartlett administration as a real administration.
Absolutely. And if you don't know what we're talking about, you got to be watching The West Wing.
Yeah, new episodes release every Sunday night.
The show ended literally 13 years ago.
Well, what can I say? There's new episodes for anyone who hasn't watched it yet.
Yeah, right? There's yes. Plenty of episodes for you if you haven't watched it yet. They have like 23 a season, and it's 7 seasons.
Cosmically, it's very new.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's true. Cosmically, it is very new.
It's extremely new.
Well, we have no more time for dilly-dallying today, because today is the real deal.
Where are we venturing out to today, Jacob?
Well, last week, if you remember, we were in Monument Valley at the corner of Arizona and Utah.
Yes, we were.
That was a good one. I enjoyed that one.
Yeah, it was quite dark. I mean, it got pretty heavy at times with our dark history.
Oh, no, you know, I meant the actual place.
Oh, you meant the actual place. Oh, the place was really cool. It was far out. It was, yeah. It was otherworldly, as we say, for a lot of places.
Today is a big one. We're talking about one of the 7 wonders of the world, a place that is 277 miles long, 18 miles wide, and over a mile deep. That's right.
Well, what could it be? I have no clue.
Well, I'll give you a hint. It's not a clown car. It's a place every person should visit at least once. He is the moment. It's the Grand Canyon.
Wow. Wow. Yes. We got good get today. Good get.
Good get. Good get on the show today. We're at
How'd
the
you
Grand
do it?
Canyon. I don't know, girl. I just
How'd
somehow scored
it?
This.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. The Grand Canyon.
I know. It's a big one. So I'd love to tell you all about the Grand Canyon, what it came from, who he used to be, and who he is now.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, we all know Grand Canyon, but who he is, I don't think I know too much.
Well, there you go.
I don't think many people know too much. They just know it exists. It's grand. It's huge. It's canyon.
I mean, what are we doing here? This is just the way to go. We're going to be covering the history of the Grand Canyon, and it starts right now.
Oh, hit me with it.
So it's my turn now to be Dr. Professor Jacob, because we have to talk a little scientific realness to understand what the fuck put this huge-ass canyon in northwest Arizona.
Yeah, what the hell is it doing there?
The canyon is a part of the Colorado River Basin and developed over 70 million years. Girl, that means dinosaurs roamed the earth when the canyon was forming. Like, the Grand Canyon was just chilling there. Meanwhile, a pterodactyl is flying overhead like...
Ooh, that's a great impression.
I mean,
as I learned on this podcast 70 million years ago, actually no humans, just just the dinosaurs.
Yes, humans started existing about 100,000 years ago.
Well, that's impressive. Wow, so a whole different species literally sightseeing in this canyon.
Yes, whole different species, whole different existence of being, like these anthropomorphic beings.
Right. But there were chickens.
There were chickens. That's true.
There were some chickens. That's nice. It's comforting.
There's nothing wrong with that statement. That is factually correct.
Well, that's good. That's good. So we got dinosaurs.
Yep. We got our dinosaurs. The canyon is the result of erosion and exposes the most complete geologic column on the planet. Like, come on, geologic column, let's get sickening.
Death drop.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of rock. There's a lot of rocks, different types.
So much. And in fact, the bottom layer of schist on the Grand Canyon is 2 billion years old. That's billion with a B.
Wow.
Yeah. And
I didn't know that many years existed.
Well, there you go. There's your private school education for you. And the range in age of the layers go to the Kaibab limestone at layer... Oh, my God. I can't do English today, Jeremy.
Yes. You got to speak your mind.
Okay, ready? So yes, the Kaibab limestone layer at the top of the Grand Canyon is 270 million years old. So the bottom layer is 2 billion. That one's, what did I say? 270 million.
Mm-hmm.
That's like a lot of years and also a lot of layers. Like
So layered.
Way more layers than Lupita Nyong'o in 12 Years a Slave.
But that was a lot of layers too.
That was
tons of layers. So that's impressive.
This place has a lot of layers.
Yes.
And the depth of the canyon and its formation are attributed to the Grand Canyon essentially being the coastline at different points for North America, with water and seashores repeatedly advancing and retreating over the edge of the uplift of the Colorado Plateau, which the canyon sits on. Whew, that was a mouthful.
So there was like water nearby a long time ago.
Not only that, but most of the formation of the canyon took place underwater, which is a lot.
Yeah. So there was not just water; it was layers of water above it too.
Yes, exactly.
Wow.
And if that's not enough, about 3 million years ago, volcanic activity deposited ash and lava all over the area, which created the rocks that sit at the basin of the canyon. Talk about drama.
Wow.
I know. It's got
so
everything.
Much is going. So much is happening to it. I feel like that's much more than any place on the East Coast could say, interesting wise, about, you know, a geological occurrence.
Oh, absolutely. It literally had like erosion. It got the underwater mm-hmm. game. It got mm-hmm. volcanic activity. It's got everything.
Wow. We really live in a boring geological area, don't we, Jacob?
Yes, we do. I'm excited to move to a more exciting one.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
So now let's take a dip into the cool waters of human history, mama.
Yes. What the hell did we do? What the hell did we do, Jacob?
Okay, come on, ancestral Puebloans? Is that it?
Puebloans, yeah.
Okay, ancestral Puebloans, this is your moment. The Puebloans were the first people known to live in the Grand Canyon area, dating back to about 1200 BC.
Mm.
That's a long time
ago. Yes, that's a long time ago. 1200 before Christ, of course.
Okay. Well, we'll skip right past that. And the Kohonina people would soon follow.
I love that
ended
name.
Up being, yes, the Kohonina. They would soon follow and ended up being the ancestors to the current indigenous people who inhabit the land today.
Okay, so we're getting all the way through this this before the common era realness. We're getting up to some of the centuries we know.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm.
So I'm very excited about this. It's time to finally bring back my Antonio Banderas. I know it's been a few weeks, but he's back.
Ooh, baby.
In 1540, Captain Garcia Lopez de Cardenas.
Wow.
Thank you. Traveled to the South Rim looking for Cibola, the lost city of gold, as made famous by the critically acclaimed film National Treasure 2.
Wow. I think it's pronounced Cibole.
it's Cibola.
Oh, I haven't watched National Treasure 2 in a long time.
Don't you remember like giant racist John Voight saying Cibola?
Nope, I don't. Maybe I didn't watch that movie. Who knows?
Oh my
god, a long time ago.
Wait a minute, if you haven't seen that, that's going to be next on our list.
I mean, I've seen at least a couple of the National Treasures. Is that one? Is the first one where they kidnap the president, or is that the second one?
That's the second one, and there's only two.
Yeah, I know there's only two. I know that.
You said you've seen at least a couple of them.
I definitely only watched National Treasure 2 on like a school bus on the way to Philadelphia for a field trip in elementary
school.
Oh
my god, we're
going
to have to rewatch
that. So that's when I saw it. I'm like almost sure about it.
All right, I'm adding that to our list. Anyway, then 200 years later now, that was 1540. Mm. We're going to 1776, again a very insignificant year.
Yes, nothing big happened, at least in Arizona.
Yeah, and that was when Francisco Atanasio Dominguez and Sylvester Velez de Escalante.
Sylvester.
They found the canyon again while searching for a route from Santa Fe to California. In the understatement of the millennium, they described the canyon as profound.
Well, that's how excited that people were allowed to get back then. Couldn't do more than that.
Yeah, that's your limit of excitement.
Mm-hmm. But
we're good.
Profound.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was saying profound. I mean, it's quite a profound place. I agree.
Yeah. Oh, it definitely is. But that brings us to 1857, when straight white man Edward Fitzgerald Beale led a small party in search of water and a surveying expedition to the south rim of the canyon.
Wow.
Yeah. On September 19th, 1857, they came upon the canyon, describing it as a wonderful canyon thousands of feet deep. And everyone in the party admitted that he had never before saw anything to match or equal this astonishing natural curiosity.
Wow. So that's a bit more descriptive, a bit more excitement in there. I think it just took another 100 years, but they got to some better TripAdvisor reviews.
Yeah, really. The TripAdvisor reviews were kind of lacking back then.
Yeah. But no, it's nice that people. We went to Monument Valley last week, and I think that place is pretty beautiful.
Yeah,
I remember the description I found from that captain who went there talked about how terrible it was. So I'm glad that people have an appreciation of Grand Canyon like from the get go. You know?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
But that brings us to 1869, when John Wesley Powell led the first expedition down the canyon. So he brought some people there, and they took a ship down the Colorado River to get there, but struck a rock close to the canyon and basically ran out of food.
Oh, that's not good. It's not a good sign.
There's actually a lot to this story. I could have used it as dark history, but I'm just going to like breeze past this one because I found an even better one for today. They decided to leave the expedition and walk 75 miles across the desert to a Mormon settlement. And they were never seen again, and their disappearance remains one of the most enduring mysteries of American Western history.
I mean, that definitely could have been a dark history, but I'm imagining you got like a pretty good one. So,
oh, I do.
But,
yeah.
But like, they went to a Mormon settlement and they just disappeared. You know, those guys probably got murdered. I'm just saying.
You know, no one knows if they ever made it because they were just never seen again.
Oh, well, okay. So maybe they didn't make it. So they ate each other and. A lot of stuff happens.
It could have been like one of our other, what was the episode we did? The cannibal.
Colorado.
Yeah.
It was in Alamosa, I think.
That's right.
This guy ate a bunch of people on a mountain. So.
I think that definitely happened here.
So, oh, certainly. In that area, I wouldn't be surprised if anything has gone down. Crazy.
Right.
Mystery.
But I will say perhaps the most significant thing about John Wesley Powell, the guy who was leading that expedition, was that he was the first to use the term Grand Canyon. Before him, man. it was called the Big Canyon.
Oh, geez. Anything else would have been better.
Wow, look at that. It's a big canyon. Let's call it Big Canyon.
Americans really have a way of naming things. I mean, thank God for John Wesley Powell and the word grand, because I don't know if I'd be able to take the place seriously if it was still called Big Canyon today.
Yeah, you know, that just reminded me. I had a teacher in seventh grade, an English teacher, who was like super Italian. And she would just like randomly break out Italian words. And one of her favorite things to say was grand, 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 grand. Grand. And it just always burned in my brain. Whenever I hear the word grand, I'm like, grand, grand.
Grand. Well, that's not... That's not Italian. That's English. Mm-hmm. You can tell that. You can tell your Italian teacher that.
Okay. Well, she was an English teacher.
Well. Your Italian English teacher. Your Italian English teacher. You got to tell her that she was speaking English the entire time.
You know
time.
How it is in New Jersey.
Yeah.
This brings us to 1903, when U.S. President Theodore Roosevelt visited the Grand Canyon and established a game preserve there in 1906.
Ooh. So the game is going to stay alive. That's nice.
Yeah, well, you know, to be shot at. They keep them alive to be shot at.
Oh, well, that's such an that's like an oxymoron. Game preserve. Like,
yeah, I know. It is.
A preserving game. Oh, God.
But on a positive note for Teddy, he got my favorite legislative act passed in the same year. You're very familiar with it. The Antiquities Act.
Yes.
Which helped form the National Parks Association and gave Roosevelt, who was the president, so this applies to any president, the power to create a national park, and he created Grand Canyon National Monument in 1908.
Oh, okay. So we start, as is the case with a lot of our national parks, they start off as monuments, even though this one definitely deserved to be a national park from the get-go.
Well,
I don't know.
I can tell you exactly why.
Sure.
It's because the land and mining claim holders were able to block it from becoming a national park because they wanted to mine there, you know, for
of course,
all different things. And actually, I'll talk about that a little more in a second. But it was finally established as the 17th national park under Woodrow Wilson in 1919.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. Thank God for Woodrow doing that MVP shit he always does.
Yeah. You know Woodrow. Great
you
guy.
You know Woodrow. Great guy.
So now I'm going to jump to what I was thinking about with the mining. There have recently been questions about uranium mining in the area, but as of now, it is, of course, still permanently preserved land. So this was in 2009 that they first discovered that the Grand Canyon might have some very large uranium deposits.
Yeah, I think that I'm always for that type of stuff. You got to start mining.
Oh, no. But as of now, it's fine. It's they're not doing any of that. But there are a lot of people lobbying for them to be able to mine at the Grand Canyon, which I think would be horrendous.
Yeah, it'd be bad. I'm just joking. But yeah, just got to put that disclaimer out there. I'm not for the bastardization of our public lands.
You're pro mining.
I'm clean coal type of guy.
Clean coal is just another word for regular coal when you're trying to make it sound better.
It's clean. They wash it.
Clean by itself is already clean. Coal is already extremely clean. It's a fucking. You ever rub coal on your hands?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We need more
of
it.
The dirts.
We need more of it. Take it and they wash it further.
Anyway, the Grand Canyon now stands as one of the world's premier natural attractions, bringing about 5 million people each year. And that is the history of the Grand Canyon.
That's a big number. I mean, and rightfully so, because it is a seven wonder of the world type of place.
Yes. That leads me to think about what did we think of the Grand Canyon?
Yeah.
I liked it.
I thought it was majestic. You know, it's a type of place that if you're coming from some of the places that we went to, I wouldn't say it blends in by any factor, but maybe it loses its oomph if you've already been to maybe Arches or Canyonlands.
Yes. I thought like out of the national parks, like, yes, it is a spectacular place, but mm-hmm. I'm not sure if it's as spectacular as some of the other parks we visited on the trip.
And I'd agree with you. It definitely takes that type of, it takes a certain, I don't want to sound snobby because we went to so many different parks on this trip. But once you've been to a lot of the national parks out west, really you begin to see that like some of these bigger ones, and we'll get to another one in a while towards the end of the trip that's very famous, they sort of lose their effect. You know, they're famous, of course, but when you're there and you compare it to other places, it doesn't rank as high as you think it would. But in not to knock Grand Canyon by any means, it was beautiful. But there's lots of other places.
But the Grand Canyon, we did two hikes. Well, actually, I think we did three hikes.
Well, we did one huge one, right? That's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
In the morning.
We hiked down past Ooh-Ah Point, right?
Yeah, Ooh-Ah Point.
And then we hiked into the canyon. We went to, what did we get to? Like Skeleton Point? What was it? Do you remember?
It was a landing, I think. It was some sort of landing. Hartsfield's Landing. Yep. but it was a morning hike. You certainly have to be good hiking up and have like some muscle to get down you know, not fall. But it was a really sort of really incredible hike. Do it in the morning before the sun rises.
No, we had a great time doing that. That was like what struck me is like I didn't realize it was going to be exceptionally easy to get into the canyon. And then it was the only difficult part of hiking into the Grand Canyon is hiking back out of the Grand Canyon.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that is once you're in, you just have to realize you have to look up and see how much ground you have to cover on the way back. Because you might not be tired then. You're definitely not going to be tired then. But when you start hiking back, it's going to be an ordeal.
Yeah. And let me just say the landing that we ended up on was spectacular. Like, we were in the canyon. We were overlooking, like, with the panoramic view of the canyon. We're, of course, going to be putting up all these pictures at Road Boys Podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And also, why not, while we're here, just plug our Gmail if you have any questions. Roadboyspodcast@gmail.com.
We have been yielding them, so thank you for their submissions.
Yes, we get tons of submissions.
Yes, we have one this week, but that's for later.
Yes. But so these Grand Canyon views that we were getting were fantastic. We had a little snack. We stopped and sat for a while on a rock. It was really pretty.
Yeah, it was sort of like sitting on the edge of the world. Like everything, you know, it's like one of the really, if we had the capability of taking one of those really good high quality 360 photos,
yes,
you would have seen so much because the landing juts out from the canyon, like the canyon's edge itself, and then you can literally see everything around you. It's beautiful.
Girl, let me just say, we took a picture. Remember, we ran into two people who wanted their picture taken, and then they took
picture.
And we were on like pure cliff face edge, and I stood on the outside, like closer to the cliff edge. And you can see, we'll put this picture up too. You can see I am like literally holding Jeremy for dear life.
You're clutching. I remember that. You're clutching onto me. And I felt like if there was a force to the back, I'm going with you. You're pulling me. I mean, you probably would pull me down with me. We're both going.
Well, yeah, if we're going, we're going together.
Yeah, we're going together. But
that was terrifying.
Cool picture though for the, and then we took theirs and they had like no fear, like they went they didn't even like touch each other in that photo.
Oh yeah, they were like up there, they were on like 1 foot, they were doing acrobatics, it looked like Cirque du Soleil up
yoga.
In here.
I know. Yeah. People really getting cute with it.
I was like, what the hell is this? But so that was fantastic. And then the next thing we did, if you remember, so we were camping in, I think, Kaibab National Forest, which is the national forest right next to the Grand Canyon.
Yes, had no complaints about that campground. Of course, it's rustic.
I had a complaint.
You had a complaint? We had a huge, what I'm saying is because we had a huge site. Remember, we had such a huge site.
Yeah, I had a complaint. The air was still.
Oh, yeah. Well, the air... at least at the first night we were there, completely still. So no airflow whatsoever. It was like room temperature at night.
It was eerie.
But nothing moving. Nothing
with
moving.
With air not moving, that is like one of the most eerie and uncomfortable feelings to me. I don't know.
Like completely being, it's one thing, you know, where you experience that indoors. That's controlled climate.
Right.
But if you're outside and literally you cannot feel any sort of breeze, the air is completely still, feels like you're indoors already.
Yeah, creepy. It's very strange. But I loved that campground other than that.
Yes.
And what we did was we went back. I think we shower? I don't remember. No, we didn't showers.
They didn't have showers. No showers.
Wow. But what we did have... was a will to keep going. So what we did was we went back to the Grand Canyon in the evening and we went out to like one of the grand viewpoints that's up there and watched the sunset and got some gorgeous photos of the sunset.
Oh, it's beautiful. A lot of people out there too. You could tell that's one of the big things to do if you're at the Grand Canyon is to go and seek the sunset.
You gotta seek the sun. I mean, you
gotta seek the
sun.
No,
I love that as a slogan.
Sun seekers.
Sun seekers. Go on. Get your sun.
Sounds like a CBS show.
Yeah.
Sunseekers, Sundays at 9 on CBS.
Yes. I don't know what it's about, but it's about two young men seeking... Actually, yeah, it's about two young men going to different sunsets.
And you know who will star? Allison Janney.
Allison Janney is the... Allison Janney is the sun.
She plays the sun.
Yes.
She's so versatile. What a great actress.
She plays the sun. So yeah, that was fantastic. I really did love the sunset. And there's a lot of there's no shortage of places to drive out to in the Grand Canyon, in the park, to see it when it happens. You just have to make sure you're there and time it correctly.
Right, right. You absolutely do. And then we went back, went to bed, woke up the next morning, got ourselves a gun, and then went over to the other side of the canyon. Where we walked around the south rim, actually. It was very cool. We stepped out on, you know, some treacherous land. We stepped over a couple barriers to get on that, if you remember.
Oh, yeah. I mean, those barriers are just suggestions.
You know what they say? No one's ever died at the Grand Canyon.
No one. No one. No one's fallen off.
No.
Nothing has happened. So,
well, Spangler, who is she?
No, nothing happened there. So, as I mentioned, be careful. But, of course, it's public land. There's suggestions.
Yeah. And, you know, I do agree, like, everyone should go to the Grand Canyon. But also, I encourage you to broaden your horizons and look for more, even more spectacular parks like Canyonlands or another one that we're going to visit later on in the trip.
Yeah, one of those places.
You know, there's I think four that stick out in my mind, two of which we've already been to, which were Canyonlands and Rocky Mountain National Park.
Yes, we're both on the same page as to like spectacular top lists.
And my favorite we haven't gotten to yet, and then right up there, I think, with Canyonlands, another one we'll get to, I think, in season two or. Maybe season two.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't know.
Have we been renewed, Jacob?
Oh, yes. This is exciting news. You know, we only have three episodes left in the season after this one. And we have been renewed for season two.
And maybe season three. We'll see how it goes. We signed the contract already.
Yes.
And multi-million-dollar deal, of course.
I wish.
And they said that we need more of you. We said, of course, we know you need more of us. And there we go.
So we will be back for season two, which is very exciting. And then also, I want to say that we just got approved on Pandora. So you can now listen to Road Boys on Pandora. And if you are listening right now on Pandora, thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening. They finally came to their senses. It only took 3 months. I mean, what the hell is that bracelet company even doing? Am I right?
I know.
Yes.
Really. Unbelievable.
They just make jewelry. What the hell?
Yeah. So this brings us now to steer clear of all of that to our dark history of the week.
Oh, boy. I'm excited. Yeah. Now, how can it top what you mentioned already?
Well, I hope it tops what we mentioned already. It's really interesting. And I got sources for today's dark history from the LA Times, HowStuffWorks.com, Mystery Media, and Wikipedia to bring you one of the Grand Canyon's biggest unsolved cases. And that is the case of Glenn and Bessie Hyde.
Wow. Well, that sounds famous.
Yeah. Do you know anything about it?
You know, it rings a bell when you bring it up. I'm very curious as to what you would find out from HowStuffWorks.com regarding this.
Oh, I found out a lot about this from there, actually.
HowStuffWorks.com. .com.
It's online.
It's online.
Okay, so on October 20th, 1928, recently married couple Glenn and Bessie Hyde set out on a boat from Green River, Utah, on a honeymoon adventure trip, wanting to set a new speed record for traveling the Grand Canyon.
Oh.
On Sunday, November 18th, they boated downriver below Hermit Rapid after finding South Rim photographer Emery Kolb, and he took a photo of them. They were never seen again.
Oof.
Yeah.
Man, they were trying to do a speed run of the Grand Canyon, like, you know, going in Minecraft, doing a speed run. But except it was real life, sounds a bit more dangerous.
Yep. All right. So let's go back a bit. Let's set all this up for you. So Glenn and Bessie met in Idaho, where they both lived in Twin Falls. In a disturbing twist here, and honestly the reason I hate straight men, they married on April 10th, 1928, when Glenn was 27 and Bessie was 18.
It's a little problematic.
I always find things like that problematic, because if they married at 18, the chances are they were fucking when they were younger than that.
Both numbers divisible by 9, though, which is nice.
All right. Glenn was an experienced boater, and Bessie was an aspiring poet, artist, and bohemian. Not to knock them, but I'm pretty sure they didn't really have careers.
I mean, why would they be doing this if they didn't have someplace else to be?
Yeah, I mean, that's true. So when they got married in April of 1928, with all that creativity and sense of adventure between them, it came as no surprise that they wouldn't take a traditional honeymoon. You know, Glenn wanted to set a new speed record for traveling through the Grand Canyon. Bessie wanted to become the first woman to ever travel through the Grand Canyon. And needless to say, this was going to be an ambitious endeavor for a honeymoon.
Yeah, well, it wouldn't be a honeymoon of my choosing, I'll just say that, and something that's that stress-inducing.
Yeah, right.
Who would want that?
I would. In those yes. days, the Grand Canyon was a hero-making run. There were no commercial river trips, and the rapids were the domain of seasoned explorers and professional expeditions.
So not Glenn or Bessie.
Exactly, yes. And as I said before, they started their trip in October 1928 in Green River, Utah.
Okay.
So close to the start of the trip, they met with an experienced river rafter near Moab, Utah, Jeremy.
Oh, we know all these places. We've been.
We've been to these places.
Yes.
He told them that their boat that they had built, by the way, was not safe for their trip. This is all recipe for disaster. He was also mm-hmm. concerned that they did not take life jackets, but the couple did not care at all and pushed on, ignoring everything he told them.
Oh, wow. So they're really on a mission to get themselves in some trouble.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I'm going to set this up like with all of these warnings, but I'll explain why when we get there, why like this is such a mystery of what happened.
Okay.
So just keep that in the back of your mind.
It's back there.
Great. Back of your mind.
Mm-hmm. Physically.
The back of your mind.
It's there.
It took the couple 26 days of river rafting on the Colorado River to reach Bright Angel Trail in the heart of the Grand Canyon. I think we were on it.
We were on it. I think it's a huge one. It goes from the North Rim to the South Rim, I think.
Yeah.
Pretty sure.
It was there that they hiked out of the canyon to the South Rim to restock supplies and meet with Emery Kolb, the photographer Ooh. Who took their photograph on November 18th that I mentioned at the beginning.
Yes. So he's just chilling out there.
Yeah.
He's just there.
So Emery Kolb, Jeremy, lived in a house on the South Rim. I think it's the house we saw right on the edge that was like a photography studio when we were there in July.
Whoa, that was like that really cool one built into the cliffside.
Yes, I think that was his house.
That's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
Slab of the rim to take it.
He's got the real estate.
Yeah, he got some real estate.
But when meeting with Kolb, Bessie had grown tired of the river trip. Kolb warned them that the road ahead would be dangerous, encouraged them to stay with him for the winter months, and offered them life jackets, which they again refused. So I want to contextualize, like, they're now in November of you know, the year 1928. Like,
winter months
are not mild in the Grand Canyon or in Arizona, as you might think if you're not from the area.
No, it snows there, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
And it's cold.
Yeah, like, and that could be really dangerous when you're rafting or on a boat.
I'd say there's like no like healthy in between time. You're either going either in the heat of summer or just it starts and starts getting cold. It just snaps.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
So, but they were supposed to make it to Needles, California by December 6th. So they left Kolb on November 18th, and they were supposed to make it to Needles, California by December 6th on that river path. Okay.
Okay.
So, now, unfortunately, they never appeared.
Oh, well, you know, they're just they're just having some trouble, probably.
Yeah. So it was Glenn's father. His name is Rollin Hyde. He had expected them to be early, so he felt like something was wrong well before the December 6th deadline. And he was able to actually get in contact with Emery Kolb, that photographer.
Mm-hmm.
And Rollin and Kolb organized a massive search effort for the couple, which included the military calling in aerial surveillance and Native American tracking teams.
That's crazy. Well, at least for the everyone first is on the case. You have Native American trackers there. You have the military. You also have aerial surveillance.
Well, you know, this was like a really big deal. Like going through the Grand Canyon on a boat was like going over Niagara Falls in a barrel or like something of that scale, you know?
I'm just surprised that they got all those resources already by that time to look for them. I'm sure that this sort of thing would happen today, aerial surveillance.
Right, exactly. But it was on December 24th, 1928, when a search party, which, by the way, Kolb was in this search party. They reached a boat adrift around River Mile 237. So that's a little past the Grand Canyon. It's a little more west. And the boat was upright and fully intact with the supplies strapped in neatly and still containing Glenn's camera and Bessie's journal. So I was talking to you about all the life jacket stuff and like all these things that could have gone wrong. They built the boat. It's not safe, whatever. This boat was found fully intact.
That's crazy. So I was not expecting that. You'd expect a crash, right? You'd expect
I subverted your expectations.
You did subvert my expectations. But you'd expect a crash, basically.
Yeah, you would. There's a fly buzzing around my head right now. This is very annoying.
I'm so sorry.
Yes, you'd expect a crash site, but there was no crash site. They were just completely gone. The boat was fine. Their supplies were in the boat. Glenn's camera was in the boat. Bessie's journal was in the boat. All of this stuff was in the boat.
He was in the boat.
You
got to get them out of the boat.
You got to get them out of the boat if you want to be in the boat.
In the boat, exactly.
Shield. The camera revealed a photograph of Glenn that was traced to have been taken on November 27th at mile 165. And the evidence suggested they made it as far as mile 226. So what I said before, I just want to keep refreshing this for you. This boat was found on December 24th, and it was at River Mile 237, okay?
Okay.
So mile 226 is Diamond Creek, where it is believed that they made camp. And Bessie's journal uncovered that they had cleared the 231 mile rapid. So basically, like, there's evidence that they made it at least 6 miles from where the boat was eventually found.
Wow. So not only did the boat remain intact, they just were walking regularly, at least for a good bit. Like, no reason why as to why they just got out of the boat completely intact. Like, they didn't seem like they're in trouble.
No, it didn't seem like they were in trouble. And like, that's what I'm saying. What was strange was it was fully intact. There was no evidence of foul play or that something had gone wrong. It was just the couple had vanished.
Dang. So like, what happened?
Well, to this day, no traces of the Hydes, no remains or whereabouts have ever been found.
That leads me to so many like thoughts, you know, nothing has been found.
And that brings us to the theories, possible explanations of what could have happened to them.
All right. Well, then what are people saying? I'd like to know.
In 1971, a woman claiming to be Bessie appeared on a commercial rafting trip. So towards the end of the trip, they made camp at Diamond Creek, which I told you about a second ago.
Of course.
And the woman revealed her true identity. She said she had a fight with Glenn down the river. He wanted to complete the trip, and she didn't, and he beat her. So she said that she retaliated by stabbing him to death and disposing of his remains.
See, I think that something like that could have happened.
Right.
They didn't seem like they're in trouble. But
I mean, that all sounds like, oh, shit, you know, like it's her. But she later said she was really into the case and basically admitted she was lying.
Oh.
Also, they never found the skeletal remains of Glenn after searching after she said that, you know, so.
Yeah. So and that, if that's the case, I mean, there are people that always like to claim, like latch onto these famous things and say that they were the person. All right. So then it wasn't so. I don't know. Maybe they made it out.
Maybe. But then in 1992, a river guide named Georgie Clark died, and her friends found a marriage certificate for Bessie and Glenn Hyde in one of her drawers, along with a birth certificate listing her name as Bessie DeRoss, which was her maiden name.
Oh, there you go. There you go. They made it out of that. They made it out of that shit. They lived.
Unfortunately, a number of historians have said that these were probably not real documents and were not convinced it was the real deal.
Oh man, they so died. They died.
There's a big back and forth going on here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Also, I should mention in 1976 they found male skeletal remains near the area, and it caused lots of excitement that it could have been Glenn, but unfortunately a forensic anthropologist was able to confirm that the remains were a 23-year-old male. And if you remember, Glenn was really creepy and already 27 when Bessie was 18.
Right.
And he had different features from Glenn, so the skeleton wasn't Glenn.
It wasn't Glenn, so they didn't find
Glenn.
So they lived.
Well, to this day, their disappearance remains a complete mystery. No one knows how or why they disappeared. No skeletal remains have been found of the couple, and neither of them were ever discovered living past the trip.
Hmm.
Many people have theories that because Bessie didn't want to finish the trip, she killed Glenn and ran, or that she was having an affair with Kolb the photographer and that she killed him to be with him, or that Kolb killed Glenn to be with her. Or you know, that the couple simply fell out of the boat and their remains were lost.
Oh my goodness.
What discredits all of these theories is a complete lack of evidence and the fact that the boat was completely intact with all the supplies packed in.
Yeah, that's the most curious part about all this.
Right. So we might never know what happened to the couple, but to this day, there are people who still go out to mile 237 on the Colorado River searching for theories or any evidence of what might have happened to Glenn and Bessie.
Wow. I mean, this story happened, I feel like, in a sweet spot. You know, 1920s stuff, something like this could happen, and we might not ever know what happened, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
At this point, I'd like to believe they lived. Just after hearing what you said, I'd like to I don't know what you think.
But. Well, you know, I don't know. I think it's plausible that like Bessie might have killed Glenn. Just because like there's lots of documentation of her very much being unhappy continuing the trip and that she really didn't want to do it. And it does seem like a lot of people have said like Glenn was kind of abusive and, you know, not that great a guy, and that he's kind of forcing her to keep going. So I do think that's plausible, but it's just weird that they would never have discovered any trace of Bessie after the fact. Like, maybe she went on the run then and died in the woods somewhere, but they just never found the remains. But also, that doesn't even make sense because they searched, like I'm telling you, this was a massive search. Like, they looked through all of these woods and areas by where they crashed, all around. Like,
exactly.
Any walking distance that was feasible was covered in the search. So it's hard to say.
I'm thinking, all right, then if not both of them, I think my money's on at least one of them having lived. Probably Bessie.
Yeah.
And this is the time in our history where you could do something like this and remain pretty much undetected if you do it successfully. If you change into your alias, move someplace else. I mean, it's unfortunate that those people that like they found those documents of Bessie and wasn't actually real, probably.
Yeah.
But it's curious. The fact that they never found Glenn's body, I still think is curious. So I'd like to believe that at least one of them did live.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, I don't think we'll ever really know for sure unless somehow that like skeletal remains wash up somewhere one day in like 2046 or something, you know.
That's the one way like maybe that all this could, if they fell off the boat, we'd probably never find any remains.
Right.
Just curious that they fell off the boat and yet everything was like, you know, intact.
It's very strange. But that is the story of the disappearance of Glenn and Bessie Hyde.
Wow. Well, that's certainly one that's made it through the ages.
Yeah. So,
crazy. Crazy.
And that actually, Jeremy, brings us to our dark history of the week.
Oh my goodness. I thought I was having a moment there.
Oh man, I was having a moment there. It brings us to our fan question.
We do have a fan question. We do.
Yes.
I've actually, we received it not long ago. And I don't want you to think that I've given myself a question, but we got a question from a super fan, a Roboy super fan, also named Jeremy. There's two Roboy super fans. One includes me. Another one includes another Jeremy.
I'm sure there's many Roboy supers fans named Jeremy.
We are Legion.
Shout out to all our Jeremys out there.
Thank you so much. And thank you to this Jeremy who sent in a fan question, and I really like it. So I'll read it to you and Do you think North Korea will fall one day? It's also double pronged. Would you also visit North Korea if given the opportunity? There are actually people out there who have visited North Korea.
Yeah, in fact, I know that Conan was in North Korea.
My global history professor spent an entire class because his expertise is Asian history. Actually, spent a lot of time traveling in North Korea. He told us how he did it too.
Okay, so then you seem better equipped to answer this, Jeremy. So go ahead. What do you think?
I don't know. Well, I actually, since I saw this question, I was reading up on it a little bit.
Oh, wow. You did some research.
From before receiving this question, I knew a little bit, you know, about the whole situation there.
Mm-hmm. The DMZ.
The DMZ, how dangerous that situation is. And also the fact that a lot of times, you know, the South Korean side, they sent in like balloons full of like cultural material. So like, you know, anyone cut off in North Korea from the rest of Western civilization and society can get a peek of what's happening on the southern side of the 38th parallel, you know.
Uh-huh.
I do think it's going to take some time. It's going to take probably the death of Kim Jong-un at least. But I do think eventually the overwhelming it'll eventually happen. North Korea will eventually fall in some way. And whether or not it will remain a cold, hard dictatorship with that oppressive of a regime, mm-hmm. I do think will dissipate over time. Whether or not it'll be such a positioning for control between China and South Korea, but even China isn't as oppressive as North Korea. So,
okay, well, you know, here's what I'll say to our super fan Jeremy, who submitted this question. Thank you for listening, Jeremy.
Thank you, Jeremy.
If we're renewed for season 3, we'll go to North Korea.
We'll go to North Korea. Put it on there. We got to make that commitment right now. We're going to North Korea.
We'll go.
I think that's what he was asking about. Like, he wasn't just he's talking about the two of us as road boys do a podcast. Yes. From
we're
from
coming Pyongyang. To you live from North Korea. We're in Pyongyang.
I would go as long as my safety was guaranteed. I just don't think that's a thing I can ever get guaranteed to me, though, in North Korea.
No, so we will not be going to North Korea, but thank you for submitting that question.
So it's a very curious one, and maybe that's something, one of the big events, besides from the coronavirus and all the stuff that's been happening this year, it'll be a big thing to witness in our lifetimes.
Wow, we heard it here first. Look at us, we're changing the world out here.
I've already predicted it. We can manifest it. You write it down. It's a thing, manifesting. We can write down a thing that we want to have happen. You repeat it as a mantra a couple times a day. It actually happens. It's science.
And that's how the Charles Manson murders took place.
So we're out here trying to just create a cult. Anyway.
Yeah. Any final questions, comments, concerns, death threats from you, Jeremy?
I have, you know, have my share of death threats levy onto you. But other than that, I think I'm, you know, I'm all right.
Yeah. All right. So next week we'll be heading back up to Utah.
Woo.
Yes. It'll be an exciting one.
It's like our third time, and it's like you dip back in, we dip back out.
I know.
We're dipping back in.
Well, just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in.
Exactly. That's how I felt about some of the states we visited with the amount of times we were there. But Utah, where are we heading in Utah?
Well, I don't want to give it away on the episode, so you can be surprised next week. But it is a different place than we were in before, with Moab and Arches and Canyonlands.
But just as groovy, just as cool.
Just as groovy and just as cool. And then, actually, we only have 3 episodes left in the season. This will be very exciting, and we're trying to put together something special for our season finale, so make sure you keep your eyes out on that.
Yeah.
And have a good week.
You have a good week. Everyone, stay warm, stay safe, and most of all, stay road boys. That makes sense.
Stay road boys. Alrighty, take care. Bye.
Bye. See you next week.
Road Boys, starring Jacob Velotti and Jeremy Shapiro as themselves. Produced by Jacob Velotti and Jeremy Shapiro. Directed by Jacob Velotti and Jeremy Shapiro. And created by Jacob Velotti and Jeremy Shapiro. Special thanks to Vlad Glashenko for recording the intro and outro music royalty-free. And Tina Perkins, that's me, for recording promotional content. To learn more, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Road Boys Podcast.